Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Pavone Group and Vigor, a branding and marketing agency for restaurant, beverage, and hospitality brands. Learn more at vigorbranding.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hello there to Fork Tales. Today's guest is Audley Wilson. Now, typically I have chefs on. Typically I have restaurateurs. But today we have a robotics expert. He is a burger expert and the founder and CEO of Robo Burger, the world's first burger chef in a vending machine. That's right. He makes burgers within a vending machine. He also recently appeared on Shark Tank to pitch his idea to the investors. Audley, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much, Michael, for having me on. I'm excited to be speaking with you.
Awesome. Well, you and I got to meet, I think it was a little over a year ago, and I saw you then again in LA, and I got to actually not only see you, but I also saw the Robo Burger. So that's super cool. And I got to test it. I got to have the burger, and it was impressive. So let's start with some background about Robo Burger. I'm sorry, it's like a tongue twister. Tell us about Robo Burger and how it all got started.
So it's a long story. I've been working on Robo Burger in its current incarnation for about 5 years, but I've been working on food robotics over the course of my entire life, and burger machines for about 20. So, my first food machine got me into Carnegie Mellon. Then it was really focused on residential kitchens, right? So like, how can you make an entire kitchen fully automated? Talk about really ahead of your time. Right. So like that was my first machine, and it was really, it could do a variety of different meals, but really all I could make well is rice and chicken.
Was that something you did before school? Like before you got into Carnegie Mellon, or was it a contest or talk about that?
Yeah. So I was working on this since, when I was in high school. So when I was in high school, I was there, constantly working on this crazy machine because I was like, I got to feed myself in college, so why not just have a crazy machine that could do it? But really, one of the challenges was it was trying to do so many things in one machine, so it was just super, super, super complicated. So that was what I was working on in high school. I've been making food ever since I self-taught electrical computer engineer. So when I was 8 years old, my dad started teaching me how to do electronics. And then I was like, this is awesome. Took his college textbooks and started going through those. And I was like, so I taught myself electronics. And then I was like, well, if I could make motors move and lights turn on, why not make a food machine? I was watching the Jetsons a lot back then. Because it was on constant replay back in the 80s. So it was like, okay, Rosie goes up to a machine and she enters what she wants. And then she, out comes this ham on a bone or whatever. And I wanted to make that machine.
That's crazy. That's wild. And I got to say, you're probably the only human being on earth that can say, I've been working on a burger machine for 20 years.
Yeah, it's taking a little longer than I expected.
but you're dedicated your life to the burger machine. I think that's awesome. I mean,
Definitely. In college, when I got into CMU, one of the reasons I got in was actually because of that residential food machine.
Sure.
And in college, CMU was awesome, and they were able to fund some of my development. I was working on the machine throughout the time period. My junior year, I was an entrepreneurship major there. So my junior year, I had to start a business. So that's when I started my first business, which was actually a restaurant. Because I was like, okay, my robot isn't there yet. If I actually want to dedicate my entire life to food robotics, I should probably learn how to cook and how a restaurant works. So I started a restaurant, there's no simpler way to do that. that's really, everyone's like, that's a horrible idea. Don't do this. This industry is hard. I definitely learned that that's the case. Yeah. But what was excellent about that time period is it enabled me to really understand what the problem was that I wanted to solve. Mm-hmm. You know, the what I was facing was massive labor problems. You know, tons, really, really long hours that I needed to cover. Lack of consistency between my chefs on the weekend or the late night shifts. You know, and also the size of the kitchen, right? My kitchen took up a large space. Like, you know, how can I make this all smaller? And then, like, you know, data. There was, like, no data in my kitchen. I got data really by putting it in at the end of the day. So I didn't really have that much data back in 2004. So, you know, that's what I wanted to solve. Like, how could I just make this? It hit me one night when I was closed down my restaurant. It's like, wow, what if I just, like, made this a lot simpler to go back to that automated food restaurant, that machine I was working on, except focus on commercial. One thing, just the burger, because it's, mm-hmm. you know, like, it's pretty standardized for the most part, right? You know, top bun, bottom bun, patty, and anything else that goes on in the middle there. So, like, you know, it's consistent. So, you know, I could do one thing over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And at that time period, I really wanted to, like, automate the whole back end of a Burger King. But yeah.
it's fascinating. So when you did your restaurant, I mean, and obviously you summed up everybody's issues in the restaurant business. I mean, quality of food, consistency, the labor shortage, and just the cost of labor. I mean, you know, you're talking to everybody here, and that makes a ton of sense. But just real quick on your restaurant, like when you started a restaurant, was it one location? Was it a QSR? Was it a focused? Was it one of those where you focused on just one sort of type of food or one sort of like burgers or hot dogs or anything like that? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I was riding a trend back in 2004. I'm not sure if you remember hookah lounges. They sure. just came through New York City. So one of my friends dragged me to a hookah bar in, LES, you know, checked out the scene. I was like, this is actually pretty cool. This is an experience I haven't had before. And, you know, it didn't exist in Pennsylvania at the time. So, mm-hmm. you know, it was the first hookah bar in Pittsburgh. You know, so I opened the concept there. At first it was a hookah bar, Mediterranean tea and drinks. And then I built out the kitchen myself and with my friends and my fraternity brothers. We built out the kitchen. So I went through the whole, process of getting all the licenses and everything there. So that's when I learned about the permitting processes, which, you know, big part of our life now. And then after that, we turned it into a whole music scene. We had, like, lines around the block. It was pretty cool. And it was Mediterranean food was the ultimate focus. Because it was so hard to build out the kitchen, we ended up going all electric. You know, using these huge pizza ovens to heat up legs of lamb because we couldn't do a stack. And that's really one of those things I think my machine really solves for. You know, it's a ventless solution. So you can put it anywhere, you just plug it in, literally. It cleans the air, filters it. Because they told me it was like $100,000 to put in my vent, just the vent solution.
Oh, sure.
I was like, really, this is crazy. So, you know, that unfortunately limited the options that I had in my establishment.
Yeah. And you are obviously a serial entrepreneur. I feel like you can see something and you can, you know, and it's not a problem. It's an opportunity, right? And everyone says that, but I think it's obvious you've executed on that all across the board, from evolving your hookah thing to the robotics to, well, if I can do electronics, why can't I make burgers with it, to I've got to eat. So therefore I should make something that can feed me. It's pretty crazy. That's awesome. And, you know, it just goes to show, I guess, that drive and positivity and the willing to have your eyes wide open and execute. That's the key, execute. And I think it's awesome. So I get to talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, but I'm really impressed by all that you've done. It's really, really super cool. So, okay, we'll get to Robo Burger here. Now, why not pizzas? Why not hot dogs? Why not chicken wings? Why burgers?
Yeah, again, it's the standardization. One of the hardest parts of food machines in general when I've been building them has been dispensing the ingredients, right? So, you know, if you have like too wide a variety of ingredients, then it can be like challenging. But really, I love burgers. back in the day, I was eating probably about 5 burgers a week. You know, so it's pretty high, pretty high percentage of burgers. I think they're really the design of it. I love the sandwich. You know, it's like the perfect meal on the go. You know, you could grab it, you could go. take it in your car. I think it's just a very convenient form of eating.
Well, look, no one's ever going to
a little more sloppy.
No, I don't think anyone ever really bankrupt trying to feed America burgers. Cause I mean, that's definitely, it's definitely on the forefront of, I think America's palate for a lot of reasons, but vending machines, they've been around for a while as far as food, hot food, but obviously pre-made and, soggy thing, not necessarily good for sure. What were some of the challenges with putting the process into a 12 square foot box and talk about the process of your burger? Cause it is not just, just reheated. It's not just a microwaved pre-made sandwich. I think maybe that might be even a drawback. Maybe people might think, well, geez, this is probably what this is, but it's not. It's made fresh. So can you talk a little bit about that and then some of the challenges?
Yeah, I've been, throughout this journey, I've been blessed to have two really good co-founders, Andy Siegel and Dan Bredo. Dan was my CTO. Me and him went to Carnegie Mellon together. So he's really been faced with having to conquer these insane hurdles of really taking an entire commercial kitchen and putting it into 12 square feet and getting NSF and UL certified as such. One of the biggest challenges, again, was, all the health requirements, right? Getting that NSF certification was a gargantuan challenge. And then getting our UL certification on top of that was even more. You always hope that there is some governing body that is ultimately saying, is this good? Is this safe? And am I going to die by eating this? That's what these groups are there for. Their standards really have pushed us to the next level in making a much better, safer thing. But ultimately, the challenges are great. So some of them, most vending machines start with food in a prepackaged container, and they stay there the entire time. Mm-hmm. Ours actually starts in a package. We open the package, dispense the components from there, close those packages, then cook and assemble everything, and then put it into a final packaging. Due to that, the food touches, food touching zones. For all the chefs out there, obviously everything needs to be cleaned, so how do you actually cook? So I guess I could go through the cooking process for the listeners who don't know how this machine works. So RoboBurger, after you've done ordering what you like on the screen and paying, it's going to then take a frozen patty out of a freezer, put it onto a griddle, and cook it on both sides. While that's cooking, it's going to dispense buns from the toaster into the toasters from our sealed dispensers. And then start toasting those. Once the buns are toasted, it's then going to grab a box, put the buns into the box, add the chosen condiments, get the patty, and then go over and get cheese, a layer of cheese on top, and then go out to the user where the user will see it come out, and then the clamshell box will close. So that's ultimately the process. That's our patented procedure for making a burger. We have 5 patents there, so those are 5 different inventions. First one is the oven system, the way we actually cook it on a griddle. We were actually cooking that, making it really, you really get to the char. It's the same way you would want a patty cooked. Mm-hmm. The toasters are another patent that we had, because ultimately we had to toast the bun and also perfectly dispense it. Our first burger machine back in 2019 that we put live in Andy's bar in Jersey City, it would flip the buns half the time. every time, it just flipped the buns half the time. It was the worst. We called it a lucky burger because it just kept. But it was like we were always lucky. It was horribly unlucky with the buns. It's but that's the thing. These products are very soft and delicate, the bun, mm-hmm. And you actually have to get it there the right side up every single time. Everyone is used to having a burger prepared one way. So, if it's ever done wrong. The next patent we had was our dispenser, which is actually what holds all the buns and the top bun, the bottom bun and the patty sit in different dispensers. So that was a real challenge because, the buns are soft. Sometimes things can stick. How do you actually, dispense it every single time? So that was a huge challenge for us. Mm-hmm. Every step was just huge hurdles. My team, I'm blessed to have a really good team, people really solving these problems. The list just keeps going, but now everything is really down to the hardware mechanisms have been perfected, and now we're getting to do some really, really cool things on the software side, which
really very exciting. Cool. And it is amazing because, excuse me, the burger is grilled, and it's not just nothing. And that's the thing. I guess I wonder that you have to not overcome, but I think people would just assume, because why wouldn't you, that, oh, it's pre-made, pre-packaged, it's in a microwave, and that's not it at all. And in fact, I'll give some plugs here. Quench, our agency, does CPG, food and beverage. We started in Pennsylvania, and your buns are Martin's potato rolls, which are very famous here in Pennsylvania, and they are making their rounds around the country. And it's a really quality product. And I think Heinz ketchup is what you're using too, another Pennsylvania brand.
Yep. So we love Heinz. The machine has these Heinz bagged products in it. So pretty much all of our condiments start in the Heinz bags, and then they get stayed sealed throughout the entire system. And that's like one of those big tests that they also make sure. How do you actually clean these lines? If you guys ever had a beer line in your restaurant, right? Lines are the worst. You got to clean them.
That's right.
So, the machine also has automatic processes to clean our condiment lines and systems like that, because every line is a problem if you don't have an actual cleaning solution. So, a machine will automatically do soap, sanitizer, hot water. It has a built-in hot water heater. Pretty much, we have as many things that you could possibly fit into 12 square feet, and you know everything that you would expect to be in a restaurant is inside of this.
Yeah, and candidly, you guys are cleaning after every burger. So we hear about health inspectors. We hear about, oh, don't go back in their kitchen, about restaurants. Oh boy, you don't want to see what it looks like back there. But you guys are actually cleaning after every burger. And so the sanitation part of this thing, the health part of this thing is like first, foremost, and extremely well thought out. Is that correct?
Yeah, 100%. That's been from the very beginning. It was like, you have to get the NSF certification. Otherwise, we can't do this. We have to be able to really scale this across the country. And the NSF, that blue sticker that says mm-hmm. NSF, that mm-hmm. was our goal from the beginning. We clean the griddle after every burger. We do heat sanitization after every 4 hours. We do every day. It does the daily soap, sanitizer, hot water treatment, the three-bin sink that you obviously required by the health department. We do that process. And we've actually gotten our cleaning procedure certified by a third party. After months and months and months of usage and doing the cleaning process, indetectable levels of microbes. So, we did the whole culture growth and everything. Dan, he's a PhD, so it's been insane to have him on, fighting this battle, because he's really been leading the charge. We're actually going to the Association of Food and Drug Officers, AFDO conference next week to present the machine to all of the health, the big health officials around the country. Because we're not shy now to show what we've done, because it's been challenging to get here, but it's pretty cool.
you should be incredibly proud, and you always are smiling and you're always laughing, and I can only imagine how many obstacles you faced. And so you have the perfect attitude as an entrepreneur, because you're willing to smile and figure out the next thing, and that's a gift. It sounds obvious, but boy, it's so hard. And
Those hard days where it's just like, you go home, you're like, I don't even know how I'm going to, I don't know how to put a smile on my face. And then you go in the next day, it's like, going to kick ass today.
No, that's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. All right. So you opened up your first Robo Burger pop-up in Jersey City in 2022. How many locations do you have now? And then where do you see your machines being successful?
Yeah. So we've been in the beta period up until Shark Tank. So that was actually when we had pulled our machines for all of our beta machines from the market. So first we actually launched our first unit to the market in 2020. That was in that dive bar in Jersey City. Mm-hmm. Then in 2022, we introduced our NSF certified Mark II generation 2 model to the mall. And then after that, we went to a Pilot Flying J and a couple other in the college in Queens and a couple other locations to, you know, just perfecting the technology, getting up to the next levels. And then now we just got our NSF, our UL certification for our Generation 5 units. And those are the units now we're rolling into the market. So we have we just launched our first units like a month ago into the market in a business location with Pfizer, and now we're launching with Penn Entertainment some casinos from Pennsylvania. We're actually launching in their location in Indiana, and then in their location in St. Louis this month. And then next month we're launching with another location for that same business, and then machines after machines. So going into a bunch of airports. In terms of where we see the best fits, convenience. It's really we are the kitchen for convenience, both unattended retail as well as the traditional convenience store. So we really are looking forward to working with partners there. Vending, obviously, vending partners. We're now able to make food service accessible for vending, which has really never been the case before. Food service previously was always prepared food, distribution, just dropping it onto a cold case. Now we're talking about real food service, being able to offer their customers a higher level solution. Airports, we're going into Orlando, MCO, and we're going to be going into a few other airports throughout the country when our partners in the travel hospitality industry. We're excited to go into a few colleges.
Sure.
Hopefully our alma mater is over the course of the next few months. So
that's awesome.
Well, it makes sense. Start getting this technology out there.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It's kind of interesting because, candidly, I was watching your episode of Shark Tank, and we can talk about that. But when I was watching with my wife. And my wife's smart. She's like asking questions. She's like, "Yeah, do you really need a vending machine that serves burgers?" She was impressed by how fresh it was and all that. And I said to her, someone did the first vending machine for a soda, and at the time, you could get a soda at your house. You get a soda at a grocery store. You get a soda probably at a convenience store. So there's plenty of places to get a soda. Why did you need to build a refrigerator, put it somewhere? And when you think about it from that perspective, I mean, it probably seemed a bit outlandish and maybe almost unnecessary. But yet, let's face it, soda vending machines are huge. So why not burgers? When you look at it from that perspective, I think it makes total sense. Because again, to your point, like colleges or airports, there's people that want to have a decent, a good quality food experience, and places aren't open. And especially now after COVID, there's so many issues with employees and, cutting down hours and all that, that you're actually answering, you've been working on the solution to a problem that probably has been exacerbated over the last couple of years.
It's interesting as well. You think back to even 2000, like there were so many more cafeterias, in every business that was open, catering to the office. Obviously, there's more work from home now, which has sort of caused a service shift, right? So people have gone from the cafeterias, and
right,
people sort of moving back into this unattended retail vending solution. So going back to the world where the automat was a solution, right? So if you think back about that, back in the 50s, there was the automat. So I think people are really starting to shift back to this high convenience, right? How can I get what I want, when I want it, wherever I am. And at the same time, businesses need to handle for the fact that there's less labor out there at significantly higher rates than it was. I'm thinking back to minimum wage. When I had my restaurant in 2004, it was $6, $6
yeah, sure,
an hour.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, I can't even imagine. So, I had 20 people. I can't imagine having that many people in a tiny, small business. With today's minimum wages and increased food costs, the challenges are getting are bigger for the operator than ever. But by going to the small unattended footprint, people are able to distribute their costs over multiple locations, make more money, and find new opportunities for growth.
That's great. So, I mean, we talked briefly about the Shark Tank episode. I think people are really interested because it is a, as an entrepreneur, I mean, like I said, it's one of those things where I'd sit there and focus on. I couldn't watch it late at night because my brain would be spinning. You know, I loved it, trying to figure out the angles. Would I do the deal? If I was selling the idea, how would I sell it? You know, looking at it from a marketing perspective, looking at it from a business perspective, it's just, you know, my head is going to explode. So talk about that. Like, did you pitch your idea? Did they come to you? What was the experience like? Did they do run-throughs? I mean, talk a little bit about that and how the whole thing came together. I mean, we see, you know, what do we see? Like 15 minutes, 12 minutes of any segment. And, you know, but what all's in there? I mean, how does that all work? I'd love to hear sort of like the behind the scenes a little bit.
Yeah, I remember when I started working on my burger machine back in the day, you know, Shark Tank had came out and everyone was like, you should go on Shark Tank with this idea. So it was crazy to actually go on Shark Tank eventually. The way it all came about was through, I guess, you know, media. When we launched our first Gen 2 machine in the mall here in Jersey, we got 4.4 billion impressions, like 43 million in earned media value. So like we just got so much media. I remember my wife's mom from Moldova saw us on TV and filmed it and sent us the video in Moldova. It was like, wow, this is. You know, and I think that shows that, like, you know, people have a lot of interest in this type of technology, mm-hmm. and burgers, specifically burgers, completely automated in a vending format. So that's when we got the eye of the, I think, Shark Tank team.
Gotcha.
So at that point, they reached out to me back in 2022. Mm-hmm. I didn't even respond because I'm like, there is no way I'm going on Shark Tank with this machine. It is way too early. I need to iterate. And then we did probably about 100 more iterations after that. And then, you know, a year later, I get the same email again. It's like, hey, I was like, wait, hold on. Did I respond the last? That's what I realized. I didn't even respond. I'm like, wow, I'm a horrible person. So like, you know, it's like, all right, you know what? I think we're ready. So, you know, responded, then that pretty much got us into the process. And then we had to do our practice pitches where, you know, the producer's feedback to me was usually around, you know, like everyone did great, except Audley, more energy. So my other two partners, they're like very photogenic. So they like, you know, they really love being on camera. So that was a fun process of, you know, just trying to actually get nailed the pitch, you know, because you get to practice, or they're practicing it amongst ourselves with some of our friends, trying to like, you know, what do you think about these lines, guys? Mm-hmm. But you know, when you actually get to Shark Tank, it's just one go. It's you get on stage and you know, you're standing on this carpet, and then next thing you know, the doors open and you. And it's live. It's, you know, no cuts. The team there is amazing. There's so many cameras, you know, trained on your every move. They're amazing. It was a really interesting experience. It was, you know, I've done thousands of pitches, you know, over the years, you know, thousands. But this one was, you know, I never had one that was, you know, quite the same filmed where, you know, it's going to be viewed by everyone and with everyone's full ego and energy and enthusiasm coming for television, you know, in terms of the judges on the other side. So, you know, it was quite an experience.
That's awesome. So I read somewhere that entrepreneurs who appear on the show are required to meet with a show psychologist afterwards, just to make sure you weren't beat up too bad or tortured by the experience. Was that true? Did you guys talk to somebody afterwards?
That's 100% true. 100% true. I know, like, I remember they told us before, it was like, that's weird. And then afterwards, it was like, it was nice to talk to. Like, we were all very over the moon and excited. So
yeah.
It was nice to, you know, they really, you know, they've been doing it for 15 years. They know what they're doing. It's an impressive organization.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, hey, and you guys got a deal. Congratulations. I'm sure some people are over there in the fetal position crying in the corner, you know, like I spent most of my life built, you know, dedicated to this business and they're telling me it's a terrible idea. So,
you know, you saw the episode. Yeah. At one point in the middle of the episode, I was like, wow, that's going to be me.
Yeah. Well, my wife said, oh, they're not going to get a deal. I'm like, well, just watch. Let's see, you know. And by the way, you said about not being photogenic. I disagree with you. But your partner, the CMO, was hilarious because he got a lot of close-ups because in the beginning, they were saying some stuff that wasn't so nice. And his eyes were just like, he looked like a deer in the headlights. It was awesome. So he made for good TV. That's for sure. That guy's he's a character. Yeah. You can tell.
He's definitely a character. He used to be on TV commercials back in the day, like Mr. Bubbles and all this other stuff. And he's quite a character.
Yeah. And so you got in with Mr. Wonderful, Kevin O'Leary, and Michael Rubin. So you got a $1.5 million loan at 9%. And are you happy with the deal? Have you guys
gotten any traction? Yeah, we're very happy with the deal.
Okay.
These are exactly the sharks that we wanted to work with. We wanted to work with Mr. Wonderful. We wanted to have him up on stage and interacting with the machine. And that was before we found out who the guest shark was going to be, and mm-hmm. it was Michael Rubin. And we're like, wow, Michael Rubin, that's really cool. So, like, you know, we ended up getting exactly the sharks that we wanted to do a deal with. Two sharks, and especially after coming to a point where we thought we were going to have, like, zero sharks at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it was a lot of fun after it was done. So it was the most intense 34 hours of my life, in a most intense 34 hour trip to LA ever.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Just nonstop.
That's awesome. Okay, so let's talk back on Robo Burger. Can you share some details about what you're cooking up for the future? I mean, like, you know, some people want bacon on their burgers. You know, we know the lettuce and tomato thing and fresh vegetable. That can be obviously an issue. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the decisions you made to do things, not to do things, and some potential ideas of what you might do next?
Yeah, so let's talk about lettuce and tomatoes first. The reason we didn't do lettuce and tomatoes first is Dan would always say is because of E. coli and some of the challenges there and being able to detect it. It actually is just another hurdle for the operator, and our goal is trying to reduce hurdles for the operator to be able to deliver Robo Burger to their end consumer. So, you know, that's why we're not offering it in our first iterations of these units. In time, we'd like to offer it. But actually, the operators that we've been working with haven't been asking for that so much. But we'd love to be able to do it so that way we can do more brand partnerships with, you know, some of the bigger fast food companies that are out there that do use lettuce and tomatoes. In terms of bacon, we would like to do bacon. We're not sure how or when. We definitely want to add it to our lineup. In terms of coming soon, what we're working towards. We want to be able to make the unit smaller. We want to have a smaller unit that we could even reduce the cost to the operator even more. We want to be able to make a bigger unit that can really be able to do really high volume. If you think about replacing the back end of burger production for any of the big fast food companies. We want to be able to go both bigger and smaller while constantly just trying to reduce the cost to the operators that way. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, I'm an operator. Andy's had three restaurants as well. Mm-hmm. We know how annoying it is to actually take, you know, portion of your profits out of your pocket to fund, X and Y expenses. So we just want to make it lower and lower and lower so that way they can make more money.
That's fantastic.
That's really where our focuses are on. Faster. You know, it currently takes us about 4 minutes to make a burger. We like to be able to get more throughput, because at the end of the day, it's all, if you're there with multiple people right now, we can spread, if there are multiple machines, we can spread orders across a few, the cluster of units. But, you know, we don't want to be that same unit to be able to make burgers two times as fast.
Yeah. Yeah. And you, if I remember correctly, your machine currently can hold like 50 burgers, right? Like, so it stacks. Yeah. So, and I mean, obviously, depending on how many you sell, someone's got to come in and then service the machine and restock it and everything else. So, yeah, that makes total sense.
So some of the airport applications in the busier high volume, then, you know, what they're doing is putting multiple machines, two, three, four machines in like clusters and then multiple clusters throughout the locations. So that's really what we're building towards, that world where you have food anywhere, anytime, because we've all been to that airport where, you know, your flight gets delayed. You're there till like 2 a.m. You know, the bar closed down at 8 p.m.
Yeah, no doubt.
Just there waiting.
Yep. I totally, I've experienced it pretty much every week. I'm on a plane every week, and every other week I'm in a situation similar to that. Like, when do I eat? When should I get something? Which can I get? What's the quality I can get? You know, and then with delays and layovers and canceled flights, you never know where you're going to be. So, I think it makes a ton of sense. Now I have a couple other just really simple questions for you. And I know your burger's great. I've had it. So between, I'll say, Burger King, McDonald's, and Wendy's, who makes the best burger?
Wendy's. Dave Thomas all day long. But right. Shake Shack is definitely my favorite here as a New Yorker. I'm a big Shake Shack fan.
Yeah, I totally. And you know what? I agree with exactly what you said. I do agree with Wendy's out of those three, and I love Shake Shack. I'm a diehard Phillies fan. They have one down outside the stadium or inside the stadium, and that's usually my go-to. That or a hot dog, of course, at the baseball game. And you know, I was at Burger America in New York, and who does the Smash Burger? And the Mr. Motz, and he said he dedicated his life to the hamburger. So you two have a lot in common. You ought to connect.
I'd love to connect with him.
Yeah. And so now, like, one final meal, if you have to, you could pick anything other than your burger. I can't let you just pick your burger, but anything.
Oh, definitely.
What would your final meal be? What would it be, and where would you have it, and why?
Probably lobster and oysters.
Very good.
On a beach in Jamaica.
Nice. Well done. I like that. I can picture that. That's fantastic.
Jamaica, because I'm Jamaican. And,
that's great.
Me and my wife are down there. I love hitting up a nice lobster from like the Rasta Shack on the beach.
That's fantastic. Hey, Ali, you were wonderful. Is there anything else you want to mention about what you're up to or anything else about the Robo Burger?
Yeah, well, so right now we're offering RoboBurger for sale for the first time, really, to the general public. Previously, we've only been working with like some of the biggest players in managed food and convenience. So now we're actually selling these units. So fantastic. If anybody's interested in getting their hands on the unit, we'd love to speak with you. Come check us out on our website, theroboburger.com, theroboburger.com, looking forward to speaking with you.
Ali, you are awesome. I appreciate your time, and I love your passion, and congratulations on your success and your fortitude, I'll say. You just smile and keep going forward. So, I mean, it's amazing, and I'm really, really impressed by what you've done. Thank you.
All right. Hey, well, thank you so much. I appreciate speaking with you.
Good deal.